say you're being victimized or extorted by this prisoner, please contact customer service at 855-466.
All subject matter in the preceding podcast is entirely alleged and not admissible in a court of law. A recklessly minimal effort has been taken to change the names and details of any guilty parties. And just in case you rat bastards get any ideas, the hosts of this podcast are notorious and well-documented liars with no legally admissible credibility. This is Mama C, and you're listening to Notes from the Pen podcast. Welcome to prison, bitch.
Greetings from the prison industrial complex. You are listening to the Notes from the Pen podcast. And I have with me Cousin Greg, and of course I am, I don't know if the favorite anymore. Bill Cosby's in prison now. He's probably a lot of people's favorite. Aside from about 50 women, he's probably a lot of people's favorite convict now. But I am have to be on the list somewhere. And so today I am here with Cousin Greg, who has a new toy that had to be completely unpackaged, rewired, and set up by Ladies Wear, which is saying a lot considering Ladies Wear is who he is and Greg is Asian. So what's up, Cousin Greg?
What's up? Sorry, I have done the Asian stereotype a massive disservice. I was completely incompetent.
Yeah, just buying random cords. And from prison, never having laid my eyes on this setup or anything, got you almost halfway there. I'm like, no, you don't need, it's Bluetooth. And, since then, everything's okay. You are, however, at the dead end of some side street, I'm assuming off a highway in Jersey somewhere, and that is the studio you're currently in, right?
That's correct, yes. I am in a little cul-de-sac, and it's a nice day out. I tried to get in this other little dead-end area just a minute ago, and there were two cops sitting there, so I figured let's pivot out of there. But that's where I'm at, in the car, in the studio.
Yeah. You want to give a little backstory, like, before we get into this this week's episode, on why you're in a car in a cul-de-sac? Or, I mean...
Yeah. I could take the wheel for a minute. Literally, I'm holding onto the wheel. I find that I have the most freedom in terms of, I guess you can call it personal time, when I'm at work. As a guy, so Bobby knows this. When you try me anytime after work hours, I am doing God knows what, right? I got a wife and three children, and so things get a little hectic. And Bobby said a while back, I'm the one of the very few people he knows that is more free at work, and therefore I'm available. So I'm in the car. Listen, I'm very happy and content to be, in the car in this makeshift studio, mostly with you. So
have we ever went over the little inside joke about, it didn't take me long after reconnecting to realize mostly over hushed tones, like, yeah, what's up, man, what? And I'm like, what are you, did you escape the basement somehow? I've created a scenario where Cousin Greg is, spends every time he's not at, every moment he's not at work, chained to some sort of pillar in the basement with a ball gag in his mouth. And, it's like for a while, like when I would talk to you, it was like, you had just spit, you somehow wriggled free and got the ball gag out of your mouth and answered the phone. And you're like, yeah, what's up, man? What's up? Oh, shit. Yeah. Call me back. Yeah, no, I'm outside by the thing. And I'm like, oh, my God, are you okay? Do I need to send for help? What's going on? And you explained, it's very, Everybody Loves Raymond or whatever sitcom-ish vibe you get about a married man who could probably, it's not that you couldn't answer the phone. Life is just easier when you don't answer mine or pretty probably, I'm assuming, anyone else's phone call when you're on husband duty. Right. Dad duty.
Wow. Everybody Loves Raymond. I've hit a new low within myself. Everybody Loves Raymond. Oh, man, the truth is stinging.
Whatever way we got to get it, it's, now I see why there's such a, you relate so much to my story of being incarcerated and my freedom. And it feels good to have someone else in the same position as me. So, Yeah, anytime we can sneak off and have a little audio rendezvous, then that's what we're doing. So I just wanted to catch the viewers up a little bit on our personal dynamic. You're one of the great things about you is you're warts and all, especially with me, and I didn't know before. I said, what can I talk? You said, you can talk about anything. Like, let's go. All right, well then, perfect. So yeah, so now we finally have, if we're going to stick with a nautical thing, we have a, I guess it wouldn't be even a steering wheel, just a wheel, a rudder, an engine. I mean, you got the mechanics down, you got the technology, and here we are. Today I wanted to do, getting back to a little bit more of the format from pre-ship jump, of having like a theme to one. And today I wanted to talk a little bit about like light stuff, like does God exist? So I figured we'd start there. You got any thoughts on God?
Yeah, since we're keeping it light, for sure. I ended up growing up very religious. I think you know, if you remember that, my upbringing was very religious. So
Catholic.
Yeah, Catholic, Roman Catholic. Parents are from the Philippines. It's the predominant religion over there.
Spaniards.
Yeah, we got it from the old colonization. Mm. Those Spanish people really got around. And as a result of that, just strict Catholic. And I struggled with that, and I came out on the other end, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or so. So that's where we can expand on that. But that's pretty much where I started at. What about you?
No, I was very much like Mama C was someone who like taught me these little a two-dimensional Christian, I guess you say. I think she thought in the 80s like, oh, this is what most people do. I don't want to make them weird. This is who Jesus is, and would read me certain things. I'd have to talk to her about it, but she was obviously not a fervent believer. I think she like, you know, we didn't go to church really. I remember there was a phase in my life where I was super fearful of the Old Testament God and shit, and thought like I'd get struck dead or so. I would like, I went to church by myself a couple times when I was like 10 or 11. But very quickly, I realized very soon, like, this doesn't make sense. Rogan has a bit about a kid with Down syndrome hearing the Noah's Ark story for the first time. He's like, he says an eight-year-old retarded boy. Of course, I would never say that, but that's what he says. He says, even if he heard it for the first time, he would have some problems. He's like, wait a minute. Is the earth even connected like that? They all walked on there. What did they eat? Because animals eat animals. But it didn't take long for me to realize that a lot of the literal shit on there was weird. And so I rebelled, you know, reactionarily, complete opposite, and was an atheist. That's when you knew, like, me and Tilson was, you know, strict atheist and would make mockery
right.
of any stuff. We'd have, like, I remember we got these satanic shirts from Gary, a little older homie, and he, and we would wear them. And on the back of the one Tilson had, it said, Hail Satan. No. It had an upside-down cross or something, and then on the back it said burn baby burn. Just the most offensive shit. And but you know, after that I grew out of my immaturity. I realized no, there might be something to this. And you know, anytime you're basing your shit on like some emotional reaction, you know, I felt like lied to and tricked by, you know, sloppy logic and all that stuff. So I was like, well, then everything must be bullshit. And then since come to realize that there's some good stuff in there, you know, there's some good stuff in there. But
yeah.
So you believe in God?
I do. But I'm not concerned with what to call it. So I think I do refer to it as God God. I was going to say Jesus, but that went out the window a long time ago. In my head, I think I say God, but I don't really care what we call it or what I call it. I started off thinking that, you know, the Bible was gospel and you know, this is just, you know, the Catholic dogma was the only way, believe that or not, so close-minded. But now I just believe in whatever. I believe that there is a God. I just know it's not. I just know it's not me.
Yeah. Well, you're part of you go to NA, right? AA, you've been sober for, what, a long time? 10, 11 years, something like that?
Yeah, started up in 2009, And it's 2021 now, so yeah.
Yeah, that can be part of it. I remember when I was going to NAAA meetings a lot, right outside of Detroit, Wayne, Michigan, right on Wayne Avenue, there's this really cool, it's like a bar/cafe-like type thing. When you walk in, you could get like coffee and a little bit of food. And there was no door, but there was like a connecting, the front half of it was open, and you could walk into like a pool room, and then you could walk into the next one. They were real long, was where the NAAA meetings were. And there, we started an agnostic one, or this guy did, and I attended the agnostic one, you know, the higher power thing and all that stuff. But, yeah, if someone asks me if I believe in God, I do the thing. And it's so hacky to be like, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. So avoiding that at all costs. That's not what I say. But I think the answer, aside from not wanting to offend people, is no, I don't believe in a God in the way that, for all intents and purposes, no, I don't. I don't believe in I don't believe in anything that is like an individualistic thing, especially with a gender, but any individualistic entity that settles, that is like looking down and not in the way what the term God means, right? I think when you get into these deeper things, that's where language starts to fail you, right? And so I believe the real question, because if there is a God, the binary nature, or just the individualistic nature of words, if they're fragments of sounds meant to delineate things with specific meanings, meaning they're different from each other. So they're boxes, and putting things into words are putting them into boxes, because they have to be this thing defined by this word. It also has to say, it's also saying what it's not, right? Saying, mm-hmm. When you say an apple, it's, you know, aside from knowing what an apple looks like, you're also describing what it's not. It's not a piece of wood. It's not super hard. You know, so mm-hmm. I think the words are inherently fail, in that if we're also, just besides the language, we're failed by the concepts we can comprehend. So for all intents and purposes, if there is a God, we can't fully know directly, I believe, or describe, or anything like that. But I do believe, I think the real question is,
you have 1 minute remaining.
Is how much time do we have left? And apparently, it's 1 minute. So I'm going to leave with this, and I'll hit you back. The real question, is there meaning to the universe? Is there a purpose? Because they kind of go hand in hand. Is there a purpose to it all, or is it all just random, and it means nothing? That's the question that I think is more realistic to try to address. And like many other things, thought a lot about it. All right,
yeah,
I'm going to hit
absolutely.
You back.
Okay, hit me back. Okay,
thank you for using GTL.
Hey!
All right. Hey! Okay, we're back.
So, yeah. So, like, in the search for trying to figure out if any of this means anything, or if it's... Because I read a lot of different things. I'll read Ram Dass and Sir Thomas Merton, who was this Trappist monk, a Christian, who wanted to go learn from, like, some Buddhist stuff. And he was in Europe somewhere, I think Germany maybe. His big homie at the church, or clergy member or whatever, was like, no, you can't go. You're kind of becoming a pretty popular writer, and we don't need it getting out that you were trying to learn some other stuff. And I don't think he wasn't trying to, like, shed his religion. He just wanted to learn about some of their beliefs on compassion and stuff like that. And he was like, no, no, no. And then eventually a new guy came in and let him go, and he went over there and studied, and he wrote some stuff about it, but he died over there. He went to, like, this Buddhist convention and got electrocuted.
Holy shit.
I think trying to plug something into the wall. This is, like, in the 30s maybe or something, maybe 40s. But I don't know. I don't know if that bode. I bet you there was whoever the guy was before that told him no was probably like, told you. Told you so. You would have just listened. But, yeah, so I read a bunch of stuff, and then I'll read stuff like Pinker, who's a strict... He's a scientist. He's a materialist. He believes that, you know, there really isn't free will and all that stuff. So I read a bunch of different stuff, and I guess the only thing we can we can do, right, is like look around and try to like observe things and infer meaning. And I'm saying, like, a lot of people say, well, I don't know, what are some of the arguments for, like, some people just take it for granted. Like, yeah, of course there's a God. Who else made this stuff? You know what I mean?
Right. Some people say to argue the absence of God, and I'm sure you've heard this before, I bring it up because it's super annoying, is the classic, if there was a God, then how could all these awful things happen? If there was a God, why are kids dying? Why is there hunger? If there was a God, why do these terrible things continue to happen? Laziest
right.
question I've ever heard.
Which is ridiculous to assume, because that's already putting a really limited human perspective on, and I mean limited time-wise, how short we live and like how little we know about the quote-unquote big picture, and to assume that death and all this. So I guess my thing is, so what do you think? Why do you think that there is suffering and shit?
I don't know. That's actually something that I wanted to mention, because you said a bunch of good stuff just moments ago. One of the things you'd mentioned was kind of about, like, kind of paraphrasing what you were saying, but two things I got out of it, which were, God is not something that we can really, as human beings, we're very limited. So speech fails us, and our basic humanity is also a failure. We are not capable of describing things that, exceed human language, and it's something that we can't understand. So, ironically, I think the place that I really found some traction with whatever God and spirituality is in this world is like a court, I was like 26 years old, way later in life in comparison to, 26 years old and realizing that I don't know shit. And to me, that was a great place to start. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a huge place. That's the most important. I think that's the most important thing about being alive, is to be like, I don't really know. I'm open to anything. What makes sense? Let me first talk about the meaning thing, and then it kind of like will dovetail naturally into why I believe there's evil. First of all, the simple answer is that in order for anything to exist, there has to be its antithesis, its opposite, right? In order for anything positive to exist, there has to be something that isn't good and positive. Otherwise, good and positive wouldn't be good and positive. It would be nothing. It would be homogeneous paste. So just by the fact that we're in a physical universe, where there's things that are and things that aren't, for something to exist, there has to be its antithesis as far as on a scale. And there's like hermetic principles about nothing actually being separate, but they're all on this dialectic continuum, you know what I mean? And there's just a variation sliding scale on how close to good or evil or whatever, and we just give definitions to that. But when I was first thinking about, is there a meaning, I was like, well, it can't be based on any, like, ethereal shit that people are just saying or taking someone else's words. So you have to use observable facts and then kind of take those things and figure out what you can infer from them in the process. And so this is undeniable, right, that there is a physical universe that's come into existence, right? And... Mm-hmm. I don't know. So there's the second law of thermodynamics has to do with entropy. And it's used for heat. It's saying like in a closed circuit or a closed environment system, that things go from order to disorder, right? That's the natural progression of things throughout the universe. It's a law of physics. If you have like a hot puff of, or if you drop hot water in cold water, it goes from being the dense, organized, excited group of hot water, and then it dissipates into colder water and averages everything out, right? So the universe went from real... I've talked to this the Captain Mothers before. The universe went from a singularity where everything was the same thing to explosion, and now things are getting disordered. You can't crack an egg. You can't unscramble an egg.
Right.
Things are... And the reason is, I was reading Pinker, the reason that the wind blowing... the sand won't form a sandcastle is because it's so much, there's so many other things that don't look like a sandcastle, right? Disorganized stuff that there's only one, a few ways to make a sandcastle. So the organization of individual pieces of sand, there's so many more other options that would make something that isn't a sandcastle. So the universe is, and that's an argument a lot of materialists use, is entropy. Things are going to chaos, right? But what life is, what physical life is that is, we are islands of entropy, where desperate, chaotic things or looser things are consumed to keep a system together, self-organizing system. So there's some sort of importance to life in this whole thing. And the fact that our universe not only makes possible, but I would argue by the amount, by the size of it and the lifespan of the universe, the laws of the universe, the physical laws of the universe, are set up to guarantee that life will evolve throughout it in different places. So that's a hint, that's a little, that's a sign of meaning somewhere. Like why do the laws of the universe allow for not just single cell organisms, but there's a direction to the life, right? It goes to more complex. It starts simple and then it goes more complex. So that's like a hint to look at as far as meaning. Why is that? Why is it for something rather than nothing? You know what I mean? So
yeah,
my idea is that, and I think I've said this before, I don't claim to know the answer or why, and I couldn't, but that it seems to me that the universe is set up to evolve to complex sentient life in, within pockets of it as a way of it experiencing itself. And I don't know why, for what part, or any of that stuff. And in that process, this is why I believe evil exists. The mechanism it takes for life to get from a single-celled, non-sentient organism to a super complex, sentient being that can observe the universe and express all kinds of emotion and love and hate and joy and pain and really experience physical reality is the mechanism it uses is Darwinism. It uses natural selection. And natural selection is something that, viewed through our eyes, is full of suffering and violence and pain. And, you know, so I think if the purpose of the universe was to evolve complex life as a way to experience itself, and I will bring up later, a higher level of purpose, is that there's like this catch-22 that the tooth and claw mechanisms that we needed to get from a single cell organism whittled away all the parts that didn't work all the way up to this complex thing that we are now and a bunch of things along the way, the mechanisms it used tends to be violence. We need stuff like selfishness and greed and tribalism and hoarding stuff and killing people who threaten us. You know what I mean? And all that stuff. And that even goes down to the viruses that end up killing us too. Well, they're struggling for survival too. So it's like this catch-22 that the physical universe uses in order to create sentient beings, right? So the argument is, at some point, that shit has to be shed. Like, that's a transitory period, almost like you put on all this winter gear to get to, like, this cabin at the top of a mountain. But once you get to the cabin and it's warm, you take the shit off. It was necessary, you needed it, but it's cumbersome and it's kind of messy in the house. You take the shit off and now, you know. So I think that's why evil might exist. And I don't know, I'm getting really fucking out there on some weird, probably hard to follow, I don't know.
No, I think that's a really interesting take because I've always heard, you know, people wanting to put religion and science in two really neat boxes. You're either a science person or you're a person of God. And what I heard from you, and I don't agree with that, it never really sat right with me. As a little kid, I used to wonder, well, if evolution, why couldn't God have played a role in evolution? Because as a young Catholic, evolution was like the worst word you can say. But what I hear, what I heard from you almost sound like a combination. It sounds like your take does allow space for science and the undescribable God, if you will.
Well,
I think that's interesting.
Well, science is science is this constantly changing thing. That's just a word we put on some shit, right? It's constantly changing. What was science 10 years ago, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago? It was vastly different from what it is today and what it'll be a while from now. And the idea that science limits itself to the observable, the physical, observable, testing, repeating testing, experimental, able to be experimented on, a repeated physical universe. And if there is a God, then all of the physical, there has to be a, it's kind of like in physics, the unifying theory, the theory of everything that Einstein wasn't able to do, macro, micro, there's all these weird things. But yeah, they of course they would all be together. And I want to say that this doesn't mean, I'm not claiming, by looking at these little things, like, oh, there seems to be a direction to the universe, and it seems to point towards complex sentient life. And one of the things unique about, so I'm just following these dominoes, and one of the unique things about complex sentient life is we can question things, and we can make connections, and we can go against, which I think is very unique, us and most animals, is we can go against the Darwinistic programming that got us here. You know what I mean? We can be altruistic and show selfless love and shit like that. And that, right there, that thing, not to be all hippy-dippy, seems to be the real meaning. As far as I know, I don't think there's a God, like, steering this thing and creating it. It almost feels like there was this, whatever was outside of space-time before the Big Bang and all that shit, there seems to have been an urge, and, like, that urge, whatever, created this thing, and within the thing created was an arrow, and, you know, the universe split into separate things, because we are all from the same shit that was forged in stars, all the carbon and iron in our blood, and all that stuff. So we're of the universe, by the universe, and we feel separate from it, but we came up as the universe and all that stuff. But the special thing that seems to be universal amongst people is that without it is destructive, and with it can heal almost anything, and that's, love. It's altruism.
You have 1 minute remaining.
It's interhuman connection. It's compassion. It's generosity. It's like sharing all that. So it seems to me that that is the highest ideal of whatever transitory phase we're in of the evolution of the universe, and then so of our species. And I feel like that is a real big clue to or piece of evidence that lies in the camp of meaning versus non-meaning, that there is this ultra, like, you know, the negative destructive stuff, that doesn't feel inherently good to every person. That's not what everyone's searching for, but everyone's searching for love. Everyone's love is so strong that people will kill for it. And me and you kind of talked about, we were having a conversation the other day about, is it better to be loved or feared, which is like Machiavelli's thing. And I'll hit you back real quick.
Okay.
Yeah, man. So, but see, there's a problem that's inherent with talking about shit like this, which is my fault for trying to bring up the subject, is there a God or not, or is there meaning in the universe, is that it's hard to try. I'd much rather just have, like, a lot of time to just slowly kick it with someone, you know, over some coffee or whatever, trying to force some of these things into little 15-minute segments, kind of, you're going to fall short, you know what I mean?
Always. But that also supports the point that you had made earlier, and that I also agree with, which is at some point, you know, just words simply fail. We're trying to describe the indescribable. So.
Yeah. Well, in a really crude way of saying, is there meaning to the universe? Is there a God? However you want to phrase it. Well, there seems to be the universe obviously allows for complex beings who seem to be satiated and be searching for love, right? And to get gratification from giving it as well as receiving it and all that stuff. Now, what that means, I don't know. I don't necessarily know what that means, but this is where I think I gained an appreciation for organized religion later, is I go, oh, well, now let me go back and read some of the shit Jesus was saying, because he talked about love. And let me go read some of the shit Buddha was saying about compassion and empathy and all that stuff. And then, you know, or Confucius and whoever, when you go back now and read that through those things of like, I don't know, this seems to be a thing that seems to be very important to humans, which are little islands of reverse entropy, you know, that just doesn't seem like an accident. It seems like with a miracle of life, which we still haven't learned how to replicate out of just chemicals, inorganic chemicals. I think that's a really big, that's as close to a smoking gun as you're going to get, is the fact that we're here and that love is a thing that seems to be very important to us. But realizing that, going back to the people who maybe were enlightened beings and reading their shit, I think can give you a better look on, and that's like a good starting point with some of that stuff, you know?
Yeah, agreed. Well put.
But I don't know. Who knows? Maybe none of it means anything. Maybe we all die and we're fucking worm food. But I don't think so. I really don't think so. I have this feeling when I hit my deepest moments of realization after I meditate or while I'm meditating, and it doesn't come as a thought, like a constructed thought, which is always like language in my head, which is how I know it's like I'm actually getting somewhere. It's a feeling, but it's a complex feeling in my chest, and it feels like when I die, I'm going to have this feeling. I'm going to go, oh. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to go, oh, shit, yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Like, if the ultimate reality of the universe is revealed upon the transition from life to death, I don't know how to say it any better than that. That's the experience I've had, is I'm going to have the feeling of, oh, yeah, right, yep, of course. You know what I mean? And I don't, obviously, I can't explain that because I would be able to understand it now if I could explain that. But I have a real, and that feeling that that's what's going to happen is very real to me. Like, that's a very, I'm very confident in that feeling because I've had it a bunch of times. And it's almost like if there was a God, higher self, unified, whatever label, insufficient label you want to put on it, it's that God is going, like, just have faith. You'll get it. Like, when you know what I mean? How, and by that, like, oh, yeah, it's going to be the understanding of things like how could there be suffering and sadness and pain and viruses and death and blah, blah, blah. You know, if you're going to have a realization, goes, oh, shit, yeah, yeah, it had to be that way.
Right.
Or shit that I could never explain right now. But that feeling I'm very confident in. And
absolutely. I was going to say, a friend of mine usually likes to drive it as, like, when those types of questions are asked, you know, why does God allow for this or that? He likes to equate it to, and I connect with this, sea turtles. He's always talking about sea turtles, where they're hatched and some make it and some don't. And yes, nature can be cruel, but as far as the why did this one make it and why didn't that one make it, just seems like an irrelevant question. And I thought that was a pretty good way to kind of articulate.
Yeah, well, it just has to, I mean, it is in a way, I guess. I think it just has to be. That's the breaking some eggs to make an omelet. I think there's also, if there is a God, I think that he, she, it, whatever, seems to want free will to exist. And for true free will to exist, there cannot be ever irrefutable proof of a God. You know what I mean? Because that would remove the free will, because then you'd go, okay, there is a God and he claims to want this and know this, and so this is what I got to do, and you know what I mean? I think that is another little breadcrumb along the trail of trying to find the truth. I kind of looked at it like, I forgot to mention this earlier. I kind of look at, you know, when they built like the Hubble and they have like these bigger telescopes now that are looking for exoplanets to see how many, if we're like unique, that there are stars, planets, around it, but the one of the problems is the sun is so bright that it drowns out visually the other things around it. So in order to, because they found thousands and thousands now, and they're like, holy shit, our galaxy is littered with like millions of exoplanets, planets revolving other stars. If they don't see the actual planet, what they do is they see a dimming of the star when it moves in front of it, and they see a wobble in the star, meaning that something's orbiting it. So in it, they don't see the planet. They can infer the planet by what's happening to the indirectly. They kind of infer that it's there. And there's like, that's how I look at those breadcrumbs, like the reverse islands of reverse entropy, the love thing, the direction towards complex life and all that stuff. And I lost my train of thought because there's been an announcement.
No, I can pick up where you left off. Basically, what you're saying is that the point of life and the reason why is love.
Gross, man. You're so gross. You're fucking gross.
Yeah, though.
But in a way, it seems like that's the... I don't know if that's the whole thing, but that's... That's definitely part of it. I feel like the universe, if there is a God, it wants to experience itself or a fragment of itself that would be constrained by space-time, physical space-time, would want to just fully experience this theme park of physical reality, and that means through everybody's eyes and perspectives. And that's all we are, a bunch of little nodes of God's like experience of itself or something. You know what I mean? And wow. Each one's different, and he needs to see what this thing is through Hitler's eyes, and the love that comes from from the family trying to save Aunt Frank, and you know, all the things that in a closed system vacuum wise you'd be like, that's bad, but then you're not seeing the big picture of it all, you know? No, this is some real, you know, hippy-dippy shit, man. I just feel like, oh, God is love, bro.
No, but that's a very, God is love. That's an interesting thing to say, because that is like saying that as we're evolving, God is kind of in the process of becoming right there along with us. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, wait, you said as we're evolving, God is in the process of what?
Yeah, that God is in the process. He's also participating in this, like, becoming along with us as humans.
Yeah, that's a good term, becoming. There's some sort of unfolding happening that seems to be physical space-time. And that, so I think if there is some version, I don't think God is the right word, but I think the divisions, the limits to the human mind, force us to like start getting into areas where you're like, well, how could he be this and not be that? How could we all be part, you know? Which is why, once again, I have a feeling I die. I'm gonna go, right. And so I'm not that. That's like a little comfort in the fact of dying. But also, like we were talking about, fear and love being greater. The Machiavelli question.
Yeah.
Any thought? What do you?
Well. Yeah, we were talking about that the other day. I was discussing with you. You and I were just chopping it up. I was telling you about my job and how changing jobs. I have a boss that, or had a boss that seemed to prefer to lead by fear. And we were just kind of talking about sort of unpacking that. And I remember wanting your take and on what you thought about, is it better to lead by fear or lead by love? And we both kind of talked about how if you lead by fear, there are consequences to it. And I was interested to know what you thought about that. I mean, I think it's
the type of control fear is a forceful, present one, right? Meaning if the person can get away with doing something bad to you and without harm, they will, right? Love is a type of control that's not even control at all. It's turning someone's self-interest outward so that even if they could get away with doing something bad to you, they wouldn't because they love you, you know? And this is another thing, like simply when I first started to try to think about that, because you were not supposed to get Machiavelli's The Prince, but I knew someone who had it in here and I read some of it, which is interesting. He gave that was written for a prince. He didn't have a gift at this big, you know, reception, this birthday thing or coronation, whatever it was. So he just wrote this thing for him about how he governed and what his opinions on it were. Anyways, I thought fear doesn't make anyone take a bullet for you. Like, you couldn't get fear to make someone take a bullet for you.
Or sacrifice
themselves for you.
Yeah.
Unless you were threatening some sort of other worse pain, but you know what I'm saying? Like, fear is not going to... the only way fear could do that is if you were afraid of losing, like, someone killing a family member, or... You know what I mean? But that's not fear. That's love. That's love for the family member. That is, you know what I mean? But anyways, we're going to get way deep, and we've already got through a bunch of deep stuff today. I don't know how long this was going to be. It's a couple calls. So, do we have any viewer questions or anything before we wrap this up?
Absolutely. And the viewer question that we have today, that was great. The viewer question that we have today, no joke, it's a pure coincidence. Has to do exactly with what we're talking about. It's crazy. It must be God. All right. Yeah. So one of our, we're going to go through a question here. It's coming from across the pond. A loyal viewer, Ghost Gerbil. All right. Here's the question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, question for the podcast. Here it is.
All right.
My phone, so I'm not straining my eyes. Here we go. Bearing in mind that I'm writing from a country that is both far less religious and far less murderous than the U.S., what are Chino's views on the impact, if any, of religion on U.S. society generally and inmates? He has mentioned some religious friends indeed whom he admires, and some have and seems to have adopted Buddhist practices for himself to a certain extent. Also, religious fraternities have been alluded to, which don't sound quite so cheerful. A lot in there, but that's the question coming from across the pond. Yeah.
All right. And we'll be back next week with the answer to that verbose. You smarmy British fuck you. No, I'm just kidding. I think religion is something that has been a net negative for our country in a lot of ways. And I guess you can't say net negative and say a lot of ways. I think here's the problem with religion. It's too complex for most people to deal with responsibly and handle responsibly. It just provides, understood superficially, it provides hard line for tribalism, you know, and judgment and looking backwards. And also, like, a lot of the stuff that ends up making it down to you through organized religion, the words, the Bible, all that stuff, is...
You have 1 minute remaining.
It was written in the desert thousands of years ago. You know what I mean? Like, I'm all right. I'll figure this out on my own. Someone figured it out on their own back then. If we're reading about it, I'm going to do my best to figure it out. So I think it's been, for the most part, been a net negative in society. And here, I think it's a little bit better. I think it's served even the religious fraternities, for the most part, really try to adopt. It gives some sort of structure and moral guidance, I think. I think it actually, in prison, it's done better.
Yeah.
I don't think it's used for as much, like, oppression or judgment as it was, as it has been in America. So, thanks, Ghost Gerbil. I'm glad you're still around. I didn't know if you were still around. Love you, bud. And to all the other pebbles out there, sorry we just dragged you through another annoyingly positive, which you can expect with Cousin Greg, you know, with this.
Yeah. Man.
His style, but so all right, well, let's get out of here. It's getting late. We've been on kind of a
thank you for using GTL.
Well, I was afraid that was going to happen, but to speak for both Chino and I, we are out.
To learn more about Bobby and prison reform, go to notesfromthepen.com. This has been another Notes from the Pen production.